Hello, welcome to Canadian Real Estate Investing Deal Deep Dive. I'm your host, Jeremy. The Deal Deep Dive offers lessons learned from Canadian investors while scaling their portfolios. If you're looking to scale your investments, listen to stories from those who have already been there and what they did in your shoes. Today we have a very special guest, Mike. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you. It's a pleasure being here. I'm excited.
So, Mike, would you be able to introduce yourself? What kind of strategy are you using? Where are you from? And just how you got started in real estate?
So, yeah. Again, name's Mike Morrow. I'm based out of Calgary, Alberta. I've been investing now since 2018. And, yeah, many people ask, how'd you get started? And common sort of theme was found out I was going to be a dad. That was my why. You know, it was one of those things that kind of was like, boom, it hit me. I realized, okay, as much as I think I'm living, I was living beyond my means. And that's why I come to find out. I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to have a little one now. Expenses are going to increase. We're going to have to figure out, you know, what to do. Because end of the day, we were kind of, you know, almost like maybe the majority, just paying bills, maybe living paycheck to paycheck. And, you know, the more you made, the more you spend. And I realized with, you know, a baby on the way, there was more responsibility beyond just myself and my wife. So end of the day, I picked up the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And ironically enough, me not being a reader at all, my mom read a lot of my books throughout high school and helped me out to get through because I played a lot of hockey on the weekends. She, God bless her, she was the one that, yeah, helped me get through high school. But nonetheless, I picked up the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and it was just an easy read, very easy read. And I was recommended, hey, you know what? If you want to, you know, get ahead in life, you got to invest. You got to put your money to work, not exchange time for money. Or at least learn how to build additional streams of income. So picked up the book and I read it and yeah, just couldn't put the book down. And then ironically, I got pinged on, I don't know if it was Instagram or Facebook. It ended up, there's a seminar, a boot camp, and it was being held in Calgary. So I ended up, went to it. I had no idea what real estate investing really was. I just knew that, hey, you know what? Did a bit of research and some of the wealthiest people invest their money in real estate. So I knew there was something to be said about it. So I attended it. It was a Saturday morning, downtown Calgary. Told my wife, I was like, hey, she was, you know, about to burst, you know, I don't know, 6 to 8 months pregnant. I was like, if you want to come with me, you can come. If you don't, that's up to you, but I'm going to go check this out. There's something about it that I was like, I just need to know. And I was like, what do I have to lose? So sure enough, kind of went to that and it led us, you know, it was scratching the surface. And, you know, part of me was almost like, it felt too good to be true. I was like, is this for real? But I knew that, you know, it was tried, true, and tested. So we ended up investing in ourselves and we went to, it was what we would call a 3-day basic. And so it was over a weekend. It was a full weekend event where we got to learn a lot more about real estate investing, dived into some of the strategies, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, fast forward today, we have managed to transition my wife from her full-time job. She was with a general contractor client as a project coordinator for 13 years. Enjoyed what she did. However, our first goal and the promise, the commitment that I made when we decided to make that decision to invest in ourselves, to learn how to do this, our biggest, my commitment was that we end up having another boy. So we have two kids, two boys. They keep us busy. But the whole goal was that after our second, she wasn't going to have to go back to work. And when you pinky swear with your wife, you need to keep that promise. So fast forward to today, she has transitioned from her job and is no longer working a T4 employee job with them, and she's spending quality time with the boys and now working full time on the business. And to answer your question about the, you know, where do we invest in the strategies? Well, we're almost across Canada utilizing various strategies at this point. And to name a few, our first baby strategy was lease options. That was the strategy that we first learned how to find it, structure it, manage it, and execute it. And we managed to do that, you know, back in Ontario. And it gave us a taste of the possibilities. We realized, oh, this is what passive income feels like. And from there, we just continue to educate ourselves and we haven't looked back. So yeah, now we utilize distressed properties and the BRRRR process within. We have a flip on the go right now in Edmonton. We've sold some of them as well from our portfolio, self-directed RSP lending on projects across the prairies. But, you know, I would say predominantly what we've been doing is distressed properties. So we're doing a lot of secondary suites. And, you know, that portfolio consists within, you know, the Edmonton, Calgary area, just because it, you know, there's a lot of economic fundamentals that just make sense from a JV perspective with the numbers. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we're doing a lot of different things and it's fun. We're learning every day and we never stop.
Are most of your deals those joint ventures, or how are you funding your deals now?
Yeah, we have managed, which again, seemed too good to be true when we were learning it, was the, you know, little to no money down deals through joint venture structuring. So basically 99% of our deals, almost all of them except for one, has been through joint ventures, none of our own money, and not having to qualify. So we find mortgage holders, money, and money partners. And we've managed to scale our business to the point that, yeah, my wife was able to leave her, you know, project coordinator job that she had after 13 years.
That's fantastic.
Possibilities are endless.
Apparently. It's very impressive that you guys got started that quickly and that efficiently, I might add, with the joint venture partners. I know lots of people who will be listening to this, they can only dream of having joint venture partners time and time and time again. So that's absolutely fantastic. Congrats.
Thank you.
Okay. So I want to switch gears here. What is the best deal you've ever done? What was the plan? What went right or wrong? And what do you believe could have been done differently now?
So the best deal we've done was in Calgary. It was a semi-detached duplex. The plan was we were going to go in. It was distressed. And we wanted to go in and utilize the BRRRR process. So that we did. And the reason why it's the best deal, one, because the numbers were extremely strong. It was performing. And the other was because it was the hurdle that I got over that I'd been longing for. And it was to not have everything lined up before pulling the trigger. So what I mean by that is, you know, the past deals, it was almost like wanted to have everything sequenced, lined up accordingly prior to being like, okay, I wanted the money lined up. I wanted to make sure I had someone that can go on title. I wanted to ensure everything was aligned. And my mentor always told me, and it's something that is easier said than done, but he was, you know, very, I guess, persistent with it, was if the deal's good enough, the money will follow. And after having a few deals under our belt, doing it with having everything sort of lined up prior, it was the deal that he told me, he's like, have you ran your numbers? Yeah. Did we go through them? Yeah. He was reiterating everything. And so what are you waiting for? It's like, well, I don't know if I'll have the money. He goes, Mike, if the deal's good enough, the money will follow. And he was very persistent with, you know, putting that, instilling it in my head. He's like, pull the trigger. You know what you need to do. You have a community in terms of people that, you know, want to put their money to work, he goes, the deal makes sense. The numbers are strong. You'll have no problem. So sure enough, pulled the trigger, and next thing you know, had interest from, investors in Vancouver and Toronto specifically on the deal, and we landed with an investor in Vancouver. And there again, it was sort of that aha moment, that light bulb that was like, okay, we overcame, another sort of hurdle, and that's all mindset, really. We overcame that, and from there, we started to scale because I realized, I was like, I know what deals work. Now it's just a matter of pulling the trigger, and you have your exit clause, or you have your protection, with your conditions, make it happen. And the dots always connect when you look back, and I find when you look ahead, everyone wants the dots to connect. And what I've realized over time is go in with a plan, obviously. However, it doesn't need to be, you have to be able to be comfortable knowing that you're going to go into it and things might not go as planned. And once you're comfortable with that, I find anything's possible.
Yeah, things never go to plan, and you just got to readjust afterwards.
So I guess, to go back to, what our plan was, we wanted to go in because it was distressed. It had an illegal suite in the basement, and our plan was to go in, renovate it. It was vacant. The family was going through some tough times financially and personally, where there's a separation, and they just wanted out, right? So one, it was a distressed owner. Two, it was a distressed property because, things just weren't being taken care of. So we managed to pick it up, make some money in the buy, which was, always rule number one. That gives you instant equity from day one. And two, we wanted to go in, work with our contractor to legalize the suite, work with the city as well to legalize the suite, get it performing, and then go back to the bank and have it appraised and refinance. So we managed to find a joint venture partner on that deal, and our contractors came in, got it renovated. Want to, it's It makes the unit safe because I've gone into a lot of secondary suites that are illegal, and I wouldn't even put, who I wouldn't put anyone in it where it's, I'm like, man, this is crazy that people live in it. But we always give it a nice facelift, and yeah, it was to get some renters in and get it performing.
I'm glad to hear it. How long did the whole renovation process take? And again, with the appraisal, how long did everything take from start to finish? Do you recall?
So the renovation, if I recall on that one, was maybe 6 to 8 weeks. So what wasn't too bad. End of the day, it was a bit of a lipstick job done upstairs. Like things weren't too distressed. It was the basement that was a bit of an overhaul because the kitchen wasn't functioning, and it was just that things were old color paint. So like upstairs was more paint. We sand, restained the flooring. And the only real structural stuff that we had to do is we opened up the one wall to make it more of an open concept. And then we closed off the staircase where the side entrance is to put a laundry unit so they could have a laundry upstairs and downstairs. That was basically all we had to do upstairs, which wasn't too bad. Downstairs was a more of an overhaul. But that took about, yeah, I think about 8 weeks, give or take. Now, the legalization process does take a bit longer. But we were pretty seamless with that too. Just making sure you're on the ball. You got to get them in as soon as possible. Thankfully, because it was an RC2 zone, the development side was simple because it was already zoned properly and it had the parking space, the amenity space, the separate entrances, and it was zoned properly. So the development permit side was simple. The building permit side, as you complete the project, you get the inspectors in. And we were fortunate because, not to get technical, but we were able to put a sprinkler system for the mechanical room and not have to drywall. One, it's a huge cost savings, which is massive, and time saving. Because as we all know, some of these utility rooms are very oddly structured with where things are at, and it can be a bit of a pain to get those sealed. But yeah, it took us about 6 to 8 weeks to do that. The appraisal, however, took a bit longer to get them to come in. So I would say we did it all within, I think it was 6 months, give or take.
Okay.
From renovation, legalization, and then the appraisal. So we had it refinanced within six months. And from there, it was already performing. We had it rented out. And this one had a garage, two-car garage too, which was fantastic because it's an additional revenue generator.
You rented that out separately?
Originally, we were going to. There's pros and cons, right? The pro is you can get more revenue. The con is now you're working with three leases. Three different, you know, families or individuals on one dwelling. It can be problemsome to a certain extent because now you have three people, like, you know, maybe people in the garage, if they're wanting to work on a vehicle or do whatever, if they're just spending time there, it can increase sort of the likelihood of having complaints from neighbors because there's too many. Not only that, if they're always in there with lights on and what have you, utility bills can go up too, because this had one meter. So we had, you know, we set a fixed amount between the upstairs, downstairs, and, you know, you do either a 60-40 split. You can figure it out how you want, whatever works for you and the numbers. But we were fortunate enough. The main floor renter wanted the garage because he had, you know, does woodworking, different stuff. He just wanted the space to be able to put his tools and what have you. So it worked out very well. I would lean on that, like, to do it that way if I can. If you want a bit more revenue, maybe you rent it out separately.
That's understandable. I'm glad to hear your main floor tenant wanted it, though.
Yeah. He was willing to pay the premium to have the garage. And it's one less headache in terms of everybody, in my opinion.
Sounds fair, especially if he's already paying for the extra revenue. So,
yeah, exactly.
It's a win-win. Sounds good. So what are some of the lessons that you learned from that deal?
You know what? One was, if you can rent it out, you know, the garage with one of the units to do that. The other lesson was, you know what? It's just working with the right general contractor that has the right workmanship, that are, you know, going to be on time and do good work, you know, because end of the day, we've had, you're chuckling, you know, we've had a contractor that, let's just say, you know, didn't work out exactly as planned with the aftermath after he was done his project. And, you know, a bit of a, we can talk about that lesson learned later on if needed. But this one here was just, it's the lesson learned was, hey, if the deal's good enough, the money will follow. Because this was the first deal that we had nothing lined up. I was pulling the trigger with how am I going to fund this deal? And once I overcame that, from there on out, there was no stopping us. It was identify performing deals, have, you know, always have your network at your fingertips in terms of, you know, who's looking for deals, who has money, et cetera, and understand their goals, understand what they're looking for. And when your deal can complement their goals, hey, magic can happen.
Absolutely. You just made a wonderful team then.
Yeah, absolutely. So this one, yeah, that one there went, has been a strong performing. Our JV partner has been happy with it. We refied it. Everything went pretty smooth. You know, always getting a mortgage is always, every lender is different, mm-hmm. right? I find it, as much as you think you have all your ducks in a row, it's always down to the wire with everything. But that's just, you know, the expectation that you have to go into any deal with. It's, things are not going to always go as planned. but be okay with it and realize that you're going to figure it out, and then you're going to look back and the dots are going to connect. But this one here, even to this day, we're still almost $1,200 a month positive cash flow, and we're splitting it
That's
50.
awesome.
So it's lovely. It's been a great investment, and there's some future economic improvements that are going to be happening in and around the area. Not that we bank on appreciation, just because we cannot control that. But there's right down there, this is where the Green Line, the transit LRT system, is going to be going right close to our place, which is usually a driver for, to have your place appreciate. But this is long term. It was nothing that made us decide on, yeah, that we got to do it. That was not our deciding factor. It was the performing asset was the number one contributor to it.
Yeah, and with cash flow like that, I think that might be pardon me, that might be a good deal in the first place, so.
Yeah, absolutely. And hey, if it appreciates down the road, to me, that's just icing on the cake and everyone else is happy.
Absolutely. I'm glad to hear it. What's the worst deal that you've done? What was the plan and what went wrong?
There's no worse deal, Jeremy. No, it's investing is always an exciting journey. It's one of those things that's you can get into it with good intentions, and sometimes things, Mother Nature could turn things around. Tenants that you thought were great could turn on you, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the worst deal, the worst deal for me would have been another similar project. However, COVID hit. So we picked it up, made money in the buy on this one as well. So our plan was, again, we were scaling from a distressed property. That was the strategy that we were focusing on, and Calgary was the market, because we follow, our what we call SMP, strategy, market, property. So distressed property was a strategy that we were utilizing. And again, we were going into a very similar market and area within a quadrant within Calgary that we knew the numbers worked. So the transaction, we bought it off a private, it was a private deal. Individual, the investor was just looking to liquidate because he was moving out of Calgary and didn't want to manage it from afar. Although he had a property manager, he just wanted to liquidate. Now the plan was one, it was a little distressed in the basement. The main floor wasn't too bad, so we weren't going to do anything, but the basement was very original, 1970s. So it was just, you can only imagine, retro style. We were going to go in, and similar deal to our other one, the best deal, we were going to go in and give it a facelift. This one had already been legalized, which was perfect. It was one less, process to have to deal with, but we wanted to improve the performance, because one, the rents were low, so it wasn't performing as well as it could have. So the rents weren't up to market rents, only because nothing had really been done in the basement. There was a lot of work to be done. So we ended up trying a new contractor. And we did our due diligence, but again, we were going off one sort of referral recommendation. And he was relatively cheap in terms of, hey, yeah, I can do this. So cheap isn't always the best, is I'm jumping to the lesson learned. Cheap isn't always the best, but he did a decent job on it. However, when we came in after completion, you can tell it's like, okay, he stretched himself to the max in terms of the budget to get the job. And we knew we were pushing him a bit in terms of the budget and the timeline, but he was pretty adamant and confident that, yeah, I can do this. I said, let me know if we're out to lunch with it. Because end of the day, it's all fine and dandy to stay within budget and timeline, but if the quality is, sacrificed, then, that can be a bit of a problem. So anyways, ended up we project completed, and you know what, it was a one-man team, you know, and I think that was a bit of a, you want to make sure when you're working with if you're going to work with a general contractor, make sure that they have other people, unless if your timelines are, you know, stretched and you're okay with that. So he was pushing himself to complete it on time and on budget. But after the fact, we came in and there was just issues. There's minor issues. One that came in, you know, just to get specific about it, you know, paint was blotchy all over. You could tell it was just a quick roll. When tenants moved in, there was, you know, he did a bit of plumbing with the bathroom. Water leaked into like one of the rooms. And, you know, I'll admit he went in and fixed it. But I questioned, like, you know, I just questioned some of the stuff that was happening after the fact. And ironically, I got a phone call. I think it was maybe a couple months later. And this individual, this other investor had, well, I don't know if she was an investor. She got my number. And he did work on her primary place. And again, water leakage from the toilet and what have you. Mold, different stuff was growing, and he could no longer be reached. So end of the day, I was like, hey, you know what, I'll try to call just to see how things are going. And I'm not going to mention names, obviously, that's not what this is about. But the number is no longer in service. So it almost makes me wonder if, you know, he was doing work and capable and able to get it done, but maybe a bit of a DIY bit of work too, where, you know, when it comes to end of the day, if you know plumbing's not your forte, hire that out. Even as a GC, you can hire another contractor to do it, to make sure that, hey, you know what, there's warranty, there's, you know, professional doing it. Cause as we all know, water is our worst enemy when it comes to anything house investing wise. So, and then, you know, the other thing that sort of went wrong with that one was before we had it rented, COVID had hit. And, you know, it was a funny time for everybody with showings and different stuff because people just didn't want to go see places. It took us a lot longer to rent that place. One, the main reason, not even COVID, it wasn't, you know, because people were scared to go in. It was beside a church and they were protesting. There was protesting going on for a couple, like I would almost say a couple months. So where parking was a pain, even just for people to come in and have a look at it, like, oh, you know, because they get the perception, is it always as busy? Is parking always going to be a pain? And right beside our unit, there was camera crews, there was police, there was people protesting on the road, walking on the grass, walking on the property, and beyond our control. So it was rather frustrating because there was not much we can do and nothing that we ever planned for. You know, this was very unexpected, uncontrolled. And, you know, it hindered us renting it quicker than we could have. Because end of the day, it's all about getting your asset to perform as quickly as possible. And that's why, you know, personal choice, I don't do pre-construction just because my goal was, you know, to have active passive income from day one to be able to transition my wife. I still work full time. However, you know, my goal will be to eventually transition as well. So it's important for us as, you know, our company to be able to have passive income right from day one. So, you know, you want to get in performance. The other thing that sort of happened was there was a fire at that same place. The school, well, it was the church, it was a church and a daycare kind of in one. They had a bus on their site, which is right beside our lot. Kids went into it and it was on the news, I believe. Kids went into it, 10-year-olds playing with matches in the back of the school bus. Thank God, you know, none of them got trapped in the school bus because the fire happened in the back and they ran out the front. But that fire, it was a, you know, there was mild wind, But it, you know, our shed got burnt, and with the heat, you know, a couple windows cracked. Again, count our blessings. It could have been much worse. No one got hurt, the kids or our tenants, and minor damage. But again, damage that we had to, you know, take care of, right? With the shed, the window, and even the grass and whatnot. You know, just one thing after another with that place. The only thing that we had going for us with that one was it was performance still. So we're still making money. You know, there's some money that had to be reinvested into it from our reserve fund to fix some of the damage, because, you know, we always put away contingencies every month. However, you know, it's just the joys of these things can happen. And, you know, end of the day, did we plan for this? No. Can anyone plan for it? No. These were just circumstances that happened. COVID, protests, and then the fire that were way beyond our control.
You mean you didn't plan for all three of those things to happen in a very short period of time?
I had a dream about it once. No, end of the day, it's, you know, and this is enough that could scare people away from investing. You know, new investors, if they're like, oh, tell me about a deal. And if I told about that deal before the best deal, mm-hmm. you know, you'd have the majority of the new investors be like, oh, wow, okay, I'm going to stick to my day job.
Yeah, that's actually why we try and gear this podcast specifically more to slightly seasoned investors who do want to scale their business, is because if brand new investors heard some of these worst deals, they would never get into real estate. Never.
No, but you know what? It's, again, that's where it's critical to go in with a plan, do your due diligence, and set aside, you know, 5% or more for vacancy, 5% or more for maintenance cost, and have reserve funds just in case if it's an older building. We do a lot of distressed properties. So, you know, you're going to run into a bit more issues. So be conservative with your contingencies, even on the renovation side. You know, if a contractor comes in and tells you it's going to take me, you know, 6 weeks and $40,000 to do this renovation, budget another 10-20% on top of that and extend that timeline by, you know, almost even double. And if the numbers work, well, you got a deal and you're protecting yourself. So it's a matter of stress testing yourself. And that's, you know, a big sort of pointer that I point out to investors that are, you know, new or looking to get into, you know, flips or distressed properties where you're going to run into this. It's just, you have to stress test yourself. Because that's where you can run into some big issues, and real estate can be risky if you don't do that.
Absolutely. You did mention reserve funds. How do you calculate what your reserve fund should be on a property?
Case by case, on average, you know, I put reserve and contingency based on renovations separately. So if a contractor, like I said, says, you know, $40,000, I'll put 10-20% depending on the age of the property and how distressed it is. When it comes to reserve funds, we every month, you know, before we pay out the cash flow, we always make sure that we have 5% for vacancy, 5% for maintenance. And then we always want to keep a couple months rent in just in case.
Sounds good.
So we will either build that up prior to distributing cash flow, or from an initial investment standpoint, we're upfront and clear about it that, you know, this is going to be a reserve fund that we want in, and that will get tacked on to the initial investment that our partners will come in with. And they're okay with that. Because end of the day, no one wants to invest in something that's going to make them lose money.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Sounds good. So what are some of the lessons that you've learned from this deal?
One was due diligence. You know, and just having a plan, a contingency, you know, always have something in place. Had we not had these reserve funds or contingencies in place, it could have been, hey, you know, after a month or two of having the, you know, our renters in, or, you know, within the first 6 months, calling up your money partner saying, hey, there's a cash call. And for those of you that don't know cash call, it's when you don't have money in the account to cover the cost of whatever issues, maintenance, or damages. So lesson learned, thankfully we were in the, you know, we had these in place, but the lesson learned for many would be ensure you have those in place prior to, you know, executing a project. The other one would be, you know, even with the tenant, yeah, big one that I want to touch on is I'd mentioned that it took us a little bit longer to tenant the basement because of the protesting and the COVID and et cetera. As an investor, because you want things to perform, you get antsy. And then you drop your guard down and you get desperate where, you know, people that you, you know, prospective tenants that you wouldn't necessarily, you know, give them the lease to rent your basement out or the unit, you tend to rent to them. So I'd say patience. You know, I'd rather wait an additional month than to get someone in just because you're desperate to get it rented, only to have nothing but a year of problems, if not more. And then not only that, damages that can far exceed what you could have made on money, revenue throughout the year, et cetera. So you can save yourself a huge headache. But just follow your gut. Don't deviate from your process. Have a good screening process in place through Simple Key. You know, they do the credit checks. They'll do background checks. Do your reference checks. Do it all. And don't deviate from that, even if you're feeling the pressure, I just need to get it rented. And hey, we waited. You know, there's moments that we sat there. It's like, do we just go with this tenant? And we're like, no, you know, we know better. And we waited. And to be honest, we've had that tenant in since day one. And they've been paying on time, fabulous to deal with. So it saved us a huge headache by waiting.
I'm glad to hear it. I know I've made some of those emotional decisions for putting tenants in very early on as well. And yeah, that patience is definitely a learned skill. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, lessons learned is be patient with your tenant. Don't deviate from the process and just have proper planning and contingencies in place for the what ifs. Because as much as we don't want those to happen, they will.
Great.
Protect your investment.
Great advice. Love it. So just before we close out here, what advice would you give to investors in your area who are looking to scale their business?
Well, there's a couple things. One is educate yourself. You need multiple strategies. When you want to scale, I know for myself, my first strategy, as I've mentioned earlier, was lease options. And as many know, it's rent to own. I was focused on that where, you know, we got our deals. We ended up getting a couple deals under our belt, but we weren't scaling to the point that we wanted to. And whoever's on social media, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, whatever it is, you realize that people are doing, there's deals out there. There's an abundance of deals. There's an abundance of money. What, you know, can hold someone back is not having enough tools under their belt to be able to identify an opportunity and have multiple strategies, exit strategies, whether it be, you know, lease options, or if you want to flip it, or service accommodations, whatever it may be. It's being able to have your lens widened so you're not sort of tunnel vision on just, oh, my one strategy doesn't work on this. It's knowing that, okay, this might not work, but I can do this, that, or that. Okay, there's an opportunity. And it gives you, you know, I guess the ability to leverage more deals and scale. So I would say educate yourself, learn the other strategies. The other one was surround yourself with like-minded community. Because what, you know, most people meet a crossroad where they either A, have not enough money or normal money, or B, I can't qualify anymore. So qualification and money, they run out. And the saying goes, if you want to go fast, go alone. And many start off that way, where they leverage their own capital and mortgageability, but then they get to three to five investment properties. and then they can't scale. So if you want to go far, you go together. So it's a saying that stuck with me. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And that boils down to building, not even building, surrounding yourself, sorry, with the right community that are like-minded, that share the same vision to grow together. Again, that's how we did it. We surrounded ourselves with the right people and have managed to scale to the point where my wife is now working full-time on the business, able to stay at home, spend time with quality time with our two kids. And we did this all with other people's money. So that would be the second, educate, and then surround yourself with the right individuals, the right community, and then take action. You know, action is huge. You know, many say knowledge is power. To me, knowledge is knowledge. If you do nothing with it, it's not power. It's taking massive action. And the last but not least, the most important, I would say, would be get a mentor. Get a coach. Someone who's already walked the path that you are setting out. Why reinvent the wheel? Why not surround yourself with someone that understands where you are today, what your goals are, where you want to go, and are doing exactly what you want to do? That would be, you know, my biggest thing. I look back again. Lease options was our first strategy. We didn't have a mentor in place. So we learned it, started executing it, but we did hit a bit of a wall. And I'll be completely honest. I almost got to the point where I was like, got a couple deals. We're an investor now. I've done what I said I wanted to do, but I'm almost okay. I feel content. And I felt sort of stuck. And I reached out to my mentor. He wasn't my mentor at the time, but I reached out to seek advice. And, you know, the things were, he's like, you're trying to build an empire with one tool. He's like, I love the plan, but how do you, what's your plan to execute? And from there on, you know, I understood, I'm like, okay, what it could make me if I started to learn these other strategies. But again, you can learn all of it, but do I know how to go do it? You know, I think it's one thing to learn it, to actually take action, because every situation is a bit different. I was like, I need someone that knows exactly what my financial statement looks like today, where I'm at, what my goals are, where I want to go, and help bridge that gap. So we took the initiative to get educated more, to learn more strategies. Didn't think twice about a mentorship. And my mentor has talked me out of deals too. Because like you said, as a, you know, newer seasoned investor, sometimes the emotions will take over. You don't want to become an emotional buyer. You got to remove that. Let the numbers talk. And I remember there was a deal at early stages of, you know, my investing journey where I wanted to, it was a pre-construction in Edmonton. And anyways, ended up, he talked me out of it. And because he's like, what are your goals? And, you know, again, I laid them out. He's like, are they contributing to it? And the clear answer was no. He said, well, why are you doing it? He goes, that money could be better used on something that's going to perform day one or near day one. So we walked away. And then that's when I started to click. It's very much, you know, why? Goal, and then we call it SMP, strategy, market, property, and they all will funnel back up. Your why is what's going to get you up in the morning, keep you up at night to, you know, work on yourself, on your dream. It needs to pull you and not push you. Because when you're pushed into something, as soon as you have a moment of challenge, you give up. Now you go back to normal. You want to take the path of less resistance. Now, when something pulls you, when you see a kid at a candy store, that pulls them. You know, they're going to do whatever it takes to get into that store, whether it's cry, go down and scream and kick and punch. That's pulling them because they want it bad.
I don't know about you, but I know my daughter would just run in there without me either way. So
Yeah, and they probably have change in their, you know, from your wallet as well to pay for it. I know my kids are the best salesmen. They will typically get what they want, as much as I'm like, I feel like I'm good at this. I'm like, you win again. So you put another check on their scoreboard. But you want it to pull you and not push you. And then your goals have to be clear cut. Anyone that I talk to that is looking to get into it or relatively new, your why has to be strong. The how you can figure out. Then it becomes your goals. That, you know, again, the saying is, those who plan to fail to plan to fail.
Absolutely.
Come up, you have to have a plan. Understand your financial situation, your financial statement. Where are you today? Are you breaking even? Are you ahead? Are you in the red? Where are you? And then from there, we look at the strategies. So the strategies are what's going to complement your goals. Because as a rule of thumb, you can start to reverse engineer those numbers, whether it's income property, multi-unit, distressed property, fix or flip, or wholesale. You can start to look at, okay, how many of these do I need to do? Now, every strategy might not work in every market today, because as we all know, the real estate cycle goes up and down. That's where you build the proper power team in every province. That way there, you don't have to let, you know, your backyard market dictate whether you're going to do a deal and scale or not.
Mm-hmm.
So you take those strategies and go into the markets that they work, whether it's in Alberta where we are, or whether it's in New Brunswick or Nova Scotia or wherever it is, build a team around that can help you move your business forward and scale. And then lastly, yeah, we just look at the property. But, you know, that boils down to what I said about the community. Surround yourself with the right community, because you'll realize once you can think big, dream big dreams, you're going to realize that there's an abundance of deals and there's an abundance of money out there. It's how bad do you want it?
Absolutely.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I really love your SMP thing, by the way, your strategy market. I think that's a great way to kind of break down your goals and decide whether or not you should do something. Love that.
Absolutely. That's how we train. That's how I would train, and do not deviate from it, because, you know, you see so many people do it backwards. They just look at a property and try to figure out what strategy is going to work. And they don't have the team in place. They don't know, you know, they do it backwards. And the simple step is just SMP. Don't deviate from it.
Mm-hmm.
But they need to complement your goal, and that's, you know, most important. So that'd be my advice for anyone that's new or just looking to get started. Those are the critical things. And then just fail forward. I say it all the time, fail forward. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. Have a mentor by your side that will ensure that you're not going to make the big mistakes that they once made. Real estate investing doesn't have to be risky. It's calculated. And when you have the right people around you, there's, you know, it's done a lot of great things, changed a lot of different lives, a lot of people's lives. It can for you. You know, you don't have to be the smartest one in the room. You don't need to know this stuff to get started, but education is key.
Absolutely. Now, we are going to have to wrap up here right away. How can people learn more about you?
Yeah. So my email that I can be reached at is mike@ccpyyc.com. So that's our business. It's Concord Capital Partners. That's our real estate investing business. I'm also a strategy coach with Trust Your Talent. You know, if you're looking how to get started, you know, it's always a place where we can have a chat and, you know, look at where you are today and where you want to go. That email is mike@trustyourtalent.ca. We have a website for both. And yeah, I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I should know what my names are on Instagram to follow me, but it's Mike Morrow if you want to follow me. And we have our, you know, Trust Your Talent and Concord Capital Partners as well.
Sounds good. I think I followed you on Instagram, Mike Morrow _, or Mike _ Morrow, but I'm sure so.
Yeah, Mike _Morrow 4 I believe is my account on that.
Yeah.
And then Concord Capital Partners can be found within my profile, my personal profile.
Sounds good. If we're wrong, I'm sure someone will let us know as well. So
absolutely.
Sounds good. Well, Mike, thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you, Jeremy. It was a pleasure, and happy investing.
Sounds good.
Appreciate it.